For moments on end, he does. It's a while later that he brings a wet towel between my legs, cleaning me carefully. Once the frenzy from before passes, I tug on my dress and underwear, putting myself together as I blush at my wanton behavior. He certainly has the how to get me mad with lust recipe down to a T. We hadn't even taken our clothes off before he'd fucked me harder than I thought someone could get fucked. And as I feel tender all over, but slowly mending, I understand why he'd been so wary about taking me before, when I hadn't possessed my healing abilities. He definitely bruised and made me sore, but it was all in the most delicious type of way. Though I'd thought about how our first time would be many times in the past, I have to say that this is beyond anything I could have imagined. It was raw and animalistic, rooted in the most primal feeling there is. And I have absolutely no regrets. It seems that most of my prudishness has gone away with his wicked influence. I smile to myself just as he comes next to me, pulling me in his arms and kissing my brow.
You know.
He smiles sheepishly.
Everyone got it so, so wrong.
I raise my brows in question.
Your blood. Yes, it is precious. But only for me.
What do you mean?
That damned coven and everyone else seems to think your blood has some magical properties. What had Fiona said, that it's the fountain of immortality? It's not. To any other person, it would be useless.
I still don't.
You're my mate, Darcy. Mine. Your essence feeds me, and only me. Just like mine feeds you.
He explains. That's why you didn't mind that I was on my period. I mumble, embarrassed under my breath. He chuckles.
Guilty.
He says as he puts his hands up.
I loved tasting you on your period, and I hope you might let me do that again.
He drawls, but there's a hidden gleam in his eyes, something that looks like hope. Mortification colors my cheeks as I avert my gaze, yet it's not before a maybe slips past my lips. After all, for him I'd do anything, wouldn't I? Wait! I whip my head around, realizing something. But why would they think my blood is so special then?
Because the coven operates on a mountain of misinformation, most of it perpetuated by Cress, Finn, and the Holy See.
He shrugs.
But also because our dear daughter had a hand in helping it spread in a way that would help us.
What do you mean?
Lydia's power was not to make clear-cut predictions. She saw versions of the future, potential events that could happen. She saw everything like a map where a chain of events would lead to an outcome. But if even one event were to change, the entire outcome would be different too.
He takes the towel and cleans the residue of blood from his torso before materializing another shirt that he shrugs on his body.
She had many visions regarding us and what would happen when you were born again, but in all of them, we failed.
Failed?
We died,
he states, his features grave. I stare at him open-mouthed.
Only in one version would we succeed, and for that to happen, we had to endure some hardships along the way. She did her best to ensure that version of the future would be the only one.
Then the prophecy that I can eradicate evil or unleash it.
It was twofold to confuse both the coven and Abel. I think you already know what he means to do.
He trails off, disappointment marring his features. He wants to use me to release you, so he can then take your powers, just as the coven wants to use me to kill you. I add carefully.
Indeed. And the only way for us to win is for you to get your necklace back from Abel, and then get access to the forbidden spells of the coven, in that order.
I see. I bite my lip as I regard him thoughtfully. So everything needs to be played according to a script.
Yes.
Is that why you pretended to be Caleb, too? I inquire softly, though the curiosity is killing me. I've been wanting to ask him that from the beginning, but with his injuries it didn't seem like a good time. His lips curl up in a devastating smile, certainly one that makes my insides tingle, butterflies having an all-out celebration in my stomach.
You're right. Lydia advised me against meeting you as myself until the time was right, until you fully remembered your past as Elizabeth, and the truth is, I couldn't stay away.
He admits with a sigh.
Are you mad at me?
He suddenly asks, panic flaring in his eyes. I am confused. Maybe it might not seem so, but you played with my feelings, I admit, as I fidget with my hands in my lap. During the day you made me fall for you as Caleb, and at night I'd see the past and I would love you as Aemon. At one point I was wondering how I could possibly love and desire two men equally. To an extent I think I did know, deep down, that I couldn't possibly fall for two. But in my mind I was just confused. He nods thoughtfully, his mouth set in a grim line.
I'm sorry about deceiving you. You have every right to be upset about that love. But...
He takes a deep breath.
After Rhiannon showed you that false memory from 05, you gave in to me for the first time as Caleb. If you want to know the truth, it's that I was afraid.
He confesses as he tucks my hair behind my ear.
Without your memories, I was afraid they would all poison your mind against me and take advantage of you. But most of all, I was jealous. Mad. Mad with jealousy.
What? I blink in surprise.
When you first came to Fairydale, I was a fucking mess, thinking you might have had someone else. You spent so much time away from here. Away from me. And with no recollection of what we were to each other, you could have...
He trails off on a pained groan.
I was consumed by jealousy,
he states vehemently. The little moments come to mind, especially the time at the cabin where he'd been scary in his jealousy. You scared me at the cabin, I murmur.
I scared myself. I was so mindless just thinking about you with another man that I almost ruined everything.
He groans. But why Caleb? Did you know he was dead?
Yes. It was why it proved to be the perfect opening for me. I would be there for you while using my mind control to ensure no one else but you saw me. That way I could gently steer you in the right direction, but without too much interference. The goal was to make you remember on your own and reach your own conclusions.
Is that why you never told me too much? He nods.
You have no idea how painful it was to see you oblivious of our past and everything around. I wanted to tell you everything, every single day, but Lydia had foreseen a version of the future in which I told you the truth from the beginning, and the coven ultimately convinced you it was all a lie.
I understand. I tell him softly. And I do, especially as I see how conflicted he is about the entire situation. But I hope you now know you have no reason to be jealous of anyone. I smile warmly at him.
No reason.
He scoffs.
Darling, I was fucking jealous of myself,
he suddenly says. My eyes widen in confusion.
Every time you called me Caleb instead of my name, I was dying inside, especially when I made you come. That was, quite honestly, the biggest blow.
A snort escapes me, followed by a giggle before I can't help myself but laugh. He is so serious about this, so full of indignation that I feel bad for finding it amusing. But how can I not? So let me get this right. You were jealous of yourself? He grumbles something under his breath, looking away as he realizes how this all sounds, too. My beloved Eamon, I whisper as I come closer, nestling against his chest and nuzzling my face against it. You're so cute.
I'm not cute.
He huffs, though his arms are locked tightly around me. Yes, you are, I tell him pointedly. And you are also the only man I've ever wanted. In this life, or the one before. Yes, I was away from you for a long time, with no memory of you or of our love. But I never looked at another man. Of that you have my vow. Leaning back just enough so he can look into my eyes, I topple all my mental barriers as I give him unfettered access to my mind, showing him my entire life before him.
Darcy.
He whispers in awe as he sees everything that happened in my life before Fairydale. Most importantly, he can see my naked feelings and the fact that even as I was falling for Caleb, my heart was irrevocably his. See? There is no reason to be jealous. I murmur lovingly.
My darling girl.
He whispers as he brings his lips to my face, peppering kisses all over my skin. Tugging me to his chest, he rocks softly with me, almost as if he didn't dare let me go for fear this is all a dream. His warmth penetrates my skin as he imprints himself on me, his presence making me feel complete for the first time in my life.
I've never looked at another female in my entire existence.
He answers my silent question.
Only you, my love. Before or after. Only ever you.
I would have never doubted that. But hearing his verbal confirmation brings an ineffable peace to my soul. As if I've been teetering on the edge of the precipice until now, but I finally found my balance. Holding me in his arms, he explains everything from the beginning. How he'd used Caleb's identity to get closer to me, but also protect me from the people in town. His telepathic abilities had helped him sow different thoughts into people's minds to create a reality where it seemed that his Caleb was part of the town's fabric. And since I can't not question him about Grace and her supposed crush on him, he confirms that her crush had been on the real Caleb, not on him, and that he'd never met her. He'd merely borrowed some of the real Caleb's life history to have a more solid background while still being himself. I nod, happy he's giving me a detailed account of everything. I may be still smarting about his small deception, but I can't help the way my heart warms at his efforts to be by my side. Can you tell me what happened in 185? How did the plague come about? I remember my own side of the story, but I still do not know his.
Crescent Finn ambushed me at the outskirts of the town. They were no match for me, but they slowed me down. When I tried to get to the church, most of the residents went against me. I realized after that Abel had made a deal with the mayor's son to raise the town against us. They even sent some people to raid our house. Luckily, Lydia knew about it, and she hid.
He smiles against my skin.
But when I arrived at the church and saw you and Abraham...
His voice breaks, just as his arms tighten around me.
I was out of control, love. I didn't even realize what was happening. I only knew I wanted everyone to hurt as much as I did. And if the coven hadn't come at that time, I fear...
He swallows hard.
I fear no one would have been safe, guilty or innocent. I would have killed everyone, just like before.
He trails off. And I instinctively know he means when Sela died. Events which I still do not remember. I bring my hand on top of his, swirling my finger over his skin in a comforting gesture. It's okay, I whisper. I'd already intuited he would have been devastated by that sight. I don't blame you. If I were capable of it, I would have done the same, I admit, even as it pains me. After all, I'd once thought Aemon was lost to me, and I lost myself too.
It was a coordinated attack they'd been planning for years, Darcy, and because I trusted Abel, I was never aware.
He whispers, telling me how much he regrets never probing his mind. Don't beat yourself up for it. He was our son. It's normal to not suspect him.
I should have paid more attention to him. I would have realized that all he wanted was power. And just like Ambrosius, just like everyone else we ever met, all they ever want is power.
He says in a ragged voice. Ambrosius? The name sounds vaguely familiar.
You might know your life as Elizabeth.
He murmurs against my cheek.
But you still need to remember your life as Sella.
You won't tell me. He shakes his head.
You need to remember everything on your own, love. Compared to your past life, your life as Sella stretches across thousands of years. I could never summarize something of that magnitude and do it justice.
Thousands of years? I echo in awe.
Soon, you'll know the entire truth, and then you'll be able to act accordingly.
You said I need to get the necklace first. That will give me back my memories, no? He nods.
That necklace holds all the secrets, not only to your memories, but also to your true powers.
According to Aemon, the necklace only recognizes me as its master, and as such, I do not need to ask for permission to use its powers. Anyone can take it, but to use it, the necklace needs to be freely given, just as Abel had asked me for verbal consent when he demanded it in the church. I touched the stone once, and I had a flash of us in ancient Rome. It was brief, but I didn't have the birthmark there. Aemon stiffens against me.
You didn't.
He confirms. You're not going to tell me why, are you? I draw back to look at him. He purses his lips, a sad smile on his lips as he shakes his head.
The only thing I can tell you is that I am not a demon, nor are you one. They called me as such because it was the only thing they could use to instill fear in people. Regular people knew the biblical tales, and they feared the devil and his army of demons. When the Holy See became aware of our existence, the entire church was terrified of the ramifications. At first, they tried to use us, but when it didn't suit them anymore, we became the foe. Crescent Finn helped in large part, playing on people's beliefs in order to turn them against us. At the end of the day, we were the other, something they couldn't understand nor make sense of.
Cress and Finn, they are the same as us, aren't they? Aemon nods.
It's my fault. They were always after me since I am a liability to everyone if I'm not dead. They've been following us for centuries.
Why? I whisper. He merely smiles, and I realize I'm not likely to get anything out of him.
When you see the past, you will know everything. I never had any secrets from you. You know my entire history, who I am, what I am, and why we've been on the run for so long, love.
Biting my lip, I regard him for the longest time before I tip my head in a hesitant nod. I am curious about everything, but if Aemon says I need to remember by myself, then I will trust him. More than anything, I trust Lydia and the fact that she's looking out for us, even from the grave. She'd certainly arranged for everything to play out according to her vision.
Although, while we're at it, I might as well confess something else.
He murmurs softly, and I could swear I note a blush on his cheeks. What?
Mr. Meow.
My eyes widen in fear. What happened to Mr. Meow? Is he okay? I haven't seen him around in so long. I burst out, panicking. Dear Lord, but I hope nothing happened to him.
No, nothing happened to him.
Where is he, then? You know where he is, don't you?
You could say so.
He scratches the back of his head in discomfort. Eamon, what is it? He's really scaring me at this point.
Well, you're looking at him.
He winces as he says it, averting his gaze. My mouth opens and closes as I stare at him. Can you repeat that? You're a cat?
Darcy, darling.
He laughs at my scandalized expression.
No, I am not a cat, but I have at times inserted my consciousness into one.
I don't. I trail off as it dawns on me. He was Mr. Meow. That's why the cat was so damn smart, because it was actually Eamon. I took you in my bath, I accuse, pointing a finger at him. I slept with you.
You also gave me dead rats to eat.
He mumbles dryly.
Which, by the way, are not at all tasty.
But you ate them anyway. I raise a brow as I cross my arms over my chest.
Of course I did.
He says in indignation.
It was that, or you'd be sad.
I blink.
And I didn't want you to be sad.
He grumbles. Eamon. My gaze softens as I look at him.
I needed to be by your side somehow. Even when I was down here and couldn't get out, I needed a way to be with you.
He adds vehemently, as if he's trying to explain himself for fear I would be upset. Eamon, I'm not mad. Maybe surprised, I guess. But how could I ever be mad that you'd go through so much trouble to be with me? If anything, I'm extremely flattered, I admit.
You're sure you're not mad?
He repeats, his eyes wide and wary. I give him a brisk nod. His arms shoot out as he brings me to his chest, his lips on my temple as he gives me one loud smooch after another. Is there anything else you want to tell me? I chuckle.
No, I promise.
Good. Now maybe we can go over our plan of action. We have 10 days until the coven will perform the spell. That means I need to get the necklace back as soon as possible. He grunts, suddenly serious.
You need to be careful with Abel. Though he has access to your powers, it's limited. You're the only one who can fully master the necklace. For anyone else, it would be 1% of its actual power.
Rhiannon said he's weakening. Since my birth.
Yes, it's exactly as you think. The jewel recognizes you as its rightful owner, and since you came back into the world, it stopped working as well for Abel. That isn't to say he hasn't learned a trick or two. He can summon those odious creatures, and they can help him in a fight. The only bright side is that it requires him days to do a summoning ritual, which means we need to plan for a quick intervention.
He never goes anywhere without his cane, I mention. Aside from that one instance when I was visiting, I frown. There was a disturbance upstairs, and he left it unattended.
Upstairs, you say?
He inquires, deep in thought. Why? What are you thinking of?
I was with you at this house last time, if you remember.
He adds, and I nod. Mr. Meow had suddenly joined me on the way. Now I see it as his way of taking care of me.
I was looking through his house while you two talked, and when he was called upstairs, I went with him.
And?
I couldn't go inside. There's a room on the second floor at the very end of the hallway that has a strong barrier spell around it. In Mr. Meow's body, it was too much for me.
What do you think he's hiding there?
Something important enough for him to leave his cane unattended.
I nod slowly. You think if I manage to get there, I might stand a chance against him?
I don't know.
He takes a deep breath.
Honestly, I'm afraid of what he's capable of either way. Even if I go out, I won't be at full capacity to help too much.
He sighs dejectedly. You're not coming, I suddenly tell him.
Of course I'm coming.
Eamon, you said only if I'm in danger.
And this constitutes the worst danger, Darcy. I'm coming, and there's absolutely no room for discussion.
But you'll be hurt for it, you silly beast! I cry out in frustration. I won't have you hurt on my account. I'll figure something out to tackle Abel.
No.
He shakes his head, crossing his arms and telling me it's final.
He's my son, too. I need to be there for it.
Well, when he puts it like that. But you'll get hurt. I make another feeble attempt at countering his arguments.
And you'll give me more of your blood, won't you?
He murmurs softly.
And more of your sweet pussy.
He continues as he licks my cheek. You're not playing fair, I stammer, the heat of his body making me forget my thoughts.
Say yes,
he continues as he takes my lower lip between his teeth, nibbling softly at it.
Say yes, darling.
Fine, I sigh. Now kiss me properly.
Much obliged.
Then his lips are on mine, properly this time. And as I melt in his arms, I truly hope this is the right decision. Because when he hurts, I hurt more.
Chapter 25. The following day, I wait until nightfall when everyone is asleep before I attempt to go down to the catacombs. I'd spent the entire day preparing some nice food for him, since I doubt he's had anything stellar in a long time. Dead rats notwithstanding. I wince as I think of him eating those to please me. My sweet beast. As I come to Eamon's quarters, I find him already waiting for me. He's shirtless, only wearing a pair of loose pants that hang low on his hips, all his muscular splendor in the open for me to admire. His hair is wet, and droplets of water cling to his skin. The moment he sees me, he pulls me to him for a deep kiss that leaves me dazed. You took a shower, I whisper. Where? He points to a corner at the end of the room, separated by a divider. That's when I realize that he's installed an entire bathroom down here. I have to say, your taste in interior design is not bad. He chuckles.
I had to make do. Since I spend all my time down here, I figured I would make it as comfortable as I could.
Let's eat, I say as I take his hand, leading him to the table. Placing the basket I'd brought with me on it, I start unpacking it, removing some food, water, and wine. Since I knew I would be seeing him again, I wanted to prepare something special for him, so I made him a few dishes.
You cook?
He inquires softly as he pokes his head in my basket, his eyes filled with excitement as he examines everything I brought. Of course. From now on, I'll bring you food every day. He licks his lips as he gazes longingly at the stew I made.
Did I tell you how much I love you?
He murmurs, though he isn't looking at me. I release a soft giggle as I place a plate in front of him, filling it with a little of everything. As he digs in, I can't help the way my heart warms as I see him eat with so much gusto.
I haven't had food cooked by you in so long.
He moans softly.
I almost forgot it's an experience in itself.
Taking a seat opposite him, I rest my elbows on the table as I watch him, that sight being an experience in itself. Maybe yesterday I was a little too lost in his presence, that I didn't get to appreciate him fully. But as I stare at him, I can't believe this man is mine. He is so handsome and kind, and despite having a slightly chaotic bent that might be constructed as evil by some, he is just my big, bad protector, the man who always put me above everything, including his own welfare. For that alone, he has my ultimate loyalty too, because he deserves nothing less than someone who would also put him first, someone who would never doubt him, even when the worst evidence is presented. And that is what I've realized about myself since I've arrived in Fairydale. I might have had a slight lapse in judgment when Rhiannon had shown me that false memory, but from the beginning, I'd known that he was never capable of something like that. Even his evil deeds, as others perceive them, are nothing more than his reaction to the world that seeks to harm him, or me. My Aemon will never intentionally hurt someone unless they ask for it. It is true that when it happens, he is capable of mass destruction, but I would never begrudge him that. Never. I know he's worried I'll see him differently if I see him in his destructive mode, but how could I, when I know his core?
What are you thinking about?
He asks, raising his gaze to meet mine. Can't you read my mind? I challenge. He shakes his head, his lips tipped up.
I want to hear it from your lips.
I was thinking that you might very well have the ability to destroy the entire world, I whisper, gauging his reaction to it. He grunts, his lips flattening.
I might, if something were to happen to you again.
He trails off.
I don't know how I would react, Darcy. It would be easy to tell you I would never do it again, but after what happened in 05, I fear I don't even know myself anymore. I've never felt despair like that before, and I struck out violently.
I reach across the table to place my hand over his, squeezing his fingers gently. I know, I whisper.
People can think the worst of me. They may think I'm Satan personified, the epitome of evil or destroyer of worlds, but as long as you love me and see me, I don't care.
I don't care either. I give him a sad smile. All my life, for one reason or another, I tried to live up to people's expectations, be proper because it was expected of me and my position, and be good because of my upbringing. If not, people would immediately associate the stigma of being an orphan with me being bad. So I tried to beat it. I pushed down all other wants and desires, and I pursued what I was supposed to. I take a deep breath, remembering all those moments in the dark when I would yearn for more, when I would see myself as being more. With time, I'd managed to stifle those feelings until only a light restlessness remained, one that could be ignored as I went about my life, ignorant and complacent about everything else that happened around me. But I'm done being that person. I'm done letting others dictate how I should feel or behave, or who I should love. So I don't care about what outsiders think of you, of us. I only care about our relationship and the fact that you are so good to me, unlike anyone's ever been.
My darling girl.
He smiles.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you. I'm rather proud of myself, I add bashfully. It's not easy to beat those voices inside my head that hold me down, but slowly I find that I'm able to do it. Remembering my life as Elizabeth has helped me enormously, because even then, my lips tremble as they pull into a smile. I went against everyone for you, just like I would now.
You've done it before.
he comments, before he can help himself. My eyes widen and I realize he's talking about Sela. I never asked you. How do you feel calling me different names? Isn't it odd? He shakes his head.
For me, you're still you, and any name of yours I would infuse with just as much love.
He answers matter-of-factly. You're such a charmer.
It's the truth.
He shrugs. There is this famous psychoanalyst, Carl Jung, and in his view, the persona's made up of experiences and social and cultural context. In that instance, without any experience of the past, wouldn't you say I am an entirely different person? Doesn't memory create a person? He thinks on it for a moment.
You're right, to an extent. Yes, memory does constitute the basis of a person, and their experiences shape who they are, but I also believe in intention and reaction, and that integral part of your essence that would react the same to a situation, regardless of whether you were Sela, Elizabeth, or Darcy.
I nod slowly, thinking back to myself and Elizabeth and agreeing with his assessment. Though the time had been different, I hadn't felt any less myself, regardless of the different upbringing and socioeconomic status.
But you also said social context.
He smiles.
And in this case, I am your social context. You might find it a bold claim, but you are you because of me, and just as I am me because of you. We're so tightly interlinked, Darcy, that sometimes we're not two individuals, just one. It's been like this from the very beginning, from the first moment we met, made even more so by our mating. It doesn't matter what world we're in, nor how far we are from each other. We are relative to one another.
I pick up a piece of bread, chewing slowly on it.
Do you remember what I told you the first time we met in 1790?
What?
My madness recognizes yours, just like my essence recognizes yours. As individuals, we're semi-whole. Only together do we feel finally fulfilled. I know you've felt it before.
Biting my lip, I give him a sharp nod.
Memory or no memory, it's your presence alone that completes me. Never doubt that.
I know what you mean. I saw you and my entire being wept with an unknown relief. Never have I experienced something like that, Eamon. Taking my hands into his, he lays a kiss on each knuckle, all the while maintaining eye contact.
I don't want you to ever doubt that I love you for you, not for the name you bear. Never that.
You too, I whisper, as a blush mars my cheeks. You have no idea how confused I was with Caleb, because how could I feel the same way about two different people? Maybe I was a little slow, or maybe I didn't want to admit what was in front of me. But even then, I felt it.
Oh, let's not mention that name again.
He grumbles.
I think I'm traumatized from hearing you say it too many times.
Eamon, I giggle. Didn't you just say it's the essence that matters, not the name? He pouts as he turns away, and he reminds me so much of Mr. Meow, I just want to take him in my arms and kiss his white hair, though it might prove more difficult with Eamon, considering he's at least twice my size.
I'm a jealous man, darling,
he admits with a weary sigh.
You'll have to get used to this small flaw of mine, but I become quite rabid if anyone dares to sniff around you.
small flaw, huh? I raise a brow in a playful manner.
I promise to refrain from killing them just for looking.
He puts a hand up.
It's the most I can do. If they put a finger on you, then all bets are off.
He smiles, quite pleased with himself. What about me, then? Do I get the same courtesy?
What do you mean?
He frowns. Well, you're a handsome man. What if a woman touches you? Can I kill her, too? I ask innocently, curious to see how he'd react. He stands up abruptly, the chair flying a distance away from him.
What? Another woman touching me?
He asks incredulously.
Another woman that is not you?
He repeats, almost as if he cannot believe I would even suggest such a thing. Yes. Can I kill her if she does that?
No. I'll kill her myself first.
He declares fervently.
Any person who upsets you, whether by intention or implication, regardless of sex, will die by my hand.
He pushes his chin up, placing his arms over his chest in a confident stance. I stifle a laugh. So, let me get this straight. You're allowed to get jealous and consequently off people, but I'm not, because you will kill them before I can even get jealous.
That is absolutely right.
He nods.
It's my job to protect you, and that means your mental state, too.
I stare at him a little flabbergasted, yet I can't help the way my lips pull up into a smile. How is he so adorable? Fine, fine, you win, I tell him. Now bring the chair back and finish your meal. It's probably cold already.
Okay.
He murmurs, grabbing his chair and sitting back at the table as if nothing happened, as if he didn't just give me an impassioned speech. And just like that, he's back to eating, slowly savoring the food while staring at me. Well, adorable might be an understatement. We spend moments on end in companionable silence as we eat while our eyes feast on each other. When he's finished, he helps me put the dirty dishes aside before placing a stack of books on the table.
So, what do you want to start with?
He asks as he opens each of them to the title page. I look at the books with a mix of horror and apprehension. Are you sure we should do this?
We convene to go to Abel's house in a few days. That gives us only a little time to prepare. And since you're technically a Stuart descendant, you can use these spells.
But I've never done a spell before, I whisper as I look at the tomes before me, all in Latin.
Sure you have. You took down the barrier. That was you performing a spell.
But...
I'll help you.
He smiles as he takes my hand, giving it a quick squeeze.
Lydia explained to me enough to guide you, and she even picked the spells she knew you would need. And besides, I happen to be fluent in Latin.
I'll have to memorize them, though, won't I? I ask as I bite my lip.
Well, yes, but first we need to make sure you do them right.
But Eamon, I burst out. I was never good at memorization. Even at school, I could never get it right. I sigh. I have this thing where if the letters of the words are similar enough, I'll mess them up. Surely that will be a problem with a spell that needs exact wording. I might even make it worse.
You won't.
He shakes his head, giving me a roguish smile.
I'm here to ensure you will do just fine. Besides, you only need to learn some defensive spells. I'll take care of the offensive.
I pout as I look at him, hoping he would change his mind, but he seems quite staunch in his conviction. Taking a seat at the table, I draw a deep breath into my lungs. Fine. Let's do this.
We need a specific plan of attack to ensure we are successful. More than anything, we need to make sure we are not found out by Cress and Finn.
I nod.
I guess it will help that Abel's power is dwindling, but...
He tilts his head, waiting for me to speak. Will we have to kill him? I ask in a whisper. Why is it that killing him leaves such a bad taste in my mouth? This is the man who killed me and his brother. Yet at the same time, he was still our son. How could I ever justify raising a hand to my child?
We must do what we must do, darling. There is no other way around this, unfortunately. Abel made his bet when he decided power was more important than his family. I can understand why he would hate me, since I am guilty of killing his parents. But you, or Abraham, or Rhiannon, and your mother?
Aemon pauses, and in his features I note the same deep pain that stabs at my heart. Abraham should have never died. The fact that he did, in my own arms, that I felt life go out of him, the sight of that still haunts me, and I doubt it will ever stop. But Aemon is right. The Abel we knew is gone. He's not only committed the murder of his kin, but he'd raped and perpetuated violence, all in an attempt to get his hands on more power. In his mind, we are both just as guilty. But to go against his own brother, to commit those atrocities...
Power corrupts.
Aemon purses his lips.
But it's not power itself that poisons the brain. It's the euphoria of chasing after it, of always getting more and more. It's an addiction, Darcy, and unfortunately... too many people have fallen prey to it.
You mean that Ambrosius, don't you? He nods, his features tight with sadness.
We've been around for too long not to experience the worst of humanity. Have we seen the best too? Yes, but more often than not, we're shown that the bad outweighs the good, at least where it matters.
I don't understand. I frown.
I know you don't.
He smiles sadly.
And I promised myself I wouldn't say too much, but we've seen empires come and go. We've seen men in power and what they do with that power. And unfortunately, 9 times out of 10, they choose to abuse it.
So you're saying he cannot be saved? I sigh.
It's too late, love. Believe me, it pains me just as much as it does you. But we cannot let that obstruct our view. We need to get you that jewel back. I really hope nothing happened to it while it was in his possession.
He trails off. All right, I say, imbuing my voice with determination. I pick up one of the books at random, since all of them have Latin titles.
This one is all about barriers and shields. I know you can heal, but your power isn't fully formed. You saw what happens if you overtax yourself.
I nod. I stop healing if I use up my energy.
That means we need to make sure you get minimally injured, ideally not at all. You might be able to handle superficial wounds, but anything more than that...
He shakes his head. How is it that my blood works for you, then? I suddenly ask. He smiles.
Because it's not only your ability to heal that gives me strength. It's the fact that you're my second half. We're bound together, Darcy. We complement each other.
Does that mean your blood would help me too?
Theoretically, it would give you some of my energy, but it wouldn't heal you.
He grimaces, about to say something else before he shakes his head and continues.
You are the super healer in the family, and when you're at full strength, you can heal more than just yourself.
I saw in that vision. I was healing a little boy.
At full capacity, your power is boundless, love. It's why everyone is after it.
I study him for a moment, and the way he regards me with such love, such confidence. Just knowing he trusts me with this makes me want to give my best. Then let's do this, I declare. I turn the page to the spell he'd marked. He reads it out loud while I follow my finger, trying to remember the right pronunciation.
This one should give you a temporary armor.
How temporary are we talking about? His lips flatten in a pitiful smile.
One and done. It's why we need a combination of spells.
I grumble something under my breath, but eventually I say the words out loud like he'd done. Nothing happened. I frown.
Well, let's see.
He lifts his hand, and under my very gaze, it morphs into a sharp blade. I'd almost forgotten he was capable of that. He brings it to me, stabbing, or more like poking me with it. Instead of penetrating my flesh, though, it seems to be stopped by some invisible barrier. Oh God! It worked! I exclaim as my eyes widen in surprise.
It did. But remember that this one can only be used once every 90 minutes. You might want to save it for hard impacts.
I nod as I throw my eyes over the words again. They aren't too hard to memorize, just a couple of lines. Okay, what's next? I meet his gaze, suddenly feeling excitement simmer in my blood. Maybe this spell business isn't as hard as I'd thought. Certainly, the reward of getting it right is quite intoxicating. We go over a few more protective spells, and I recognize one of them as being what Rhiannon had used in her fight with Abel. That one is slightly more complicated, though, and the moment I'm done reciting it, I start feeling lightheaded, and we need to put a temporary halt to our practice.
Here.
Aemon seats me on the bed and gives me a glass of water. Thank you, I murmur.
You're doing great, darling. I know this is a lot, but honestly, most of it is for my peace of mind. I need to know you can defend yourself when the time comes.
I understand. For the rest of the week, we spend every possible moment together as we practice the spells Lydia had left for me. Aemon proves to be quite the teacher with his unlimited amount of patience and amazing insight. If I hadn't been completely in love with him already, I would have fallen for him simply for his pristine work ethic and sweet personality. Though I don't know much about the past, I remember that he was a general in the army, and I can clearly see how that reflects in his manners. He speaks with a certain assuredness that makes me want to hang on to his every word and obey every command. But, more than anything, I can see his vast experience in how he approaches this one mission. He's already made one main plan and countless spare ones as he tried to account for everything that might go wrong.
Are you sure you're ready for this, love?
He murmurs in my hair as he holds me in his arms the night before we're set to put our plan in motion. Yes, and we need to succeed. The coven is coming to the manor soon. We need to get this done before they arrive.
You're right. Depending on how experienced the members are, they might be able to feel the disturbance if we do it with them in Fairydale.
We can do this, I whisper, hoping to cheer myself on.
Remember that if you happen to forget words from the spells, call my name, and I will feed them to you in your mind.
It will all be fine, I whisper as I nuzzle into him. We go to sleep wrapped in each other, and as I'm getting used to sleeping with him, I don't know how I ever managed to do it by myself in the past. Aemon was right, that there's something about our connection that goes beyond just being a couple. When I'm with him, I feel unusually whole. Every little part of me vibrates with every little part of him, each so thoroughly complementary, we're like two pieces of a puzzle matched to perfection. He'd implied the reason for this hides in my memories as Sella, and I cannot wait to find out about our past, how everything started, I can tell that Aemon has a hard time not telling me about our past, and sometimes he has to censor himself to not give away too much. At the same time, it's clear that most of our fondest memories are in that past, and that is all the motivation I need to see this to the end. I need to know who I am, who I was. The following day, we both wake up and slowly dress while going over our plan once more. When we're ready to head out, Aemon flashes us in front of the church.
Are you okay? My eyes widen when I see his eyes flash between light blue and a deep red. He strains a smile.
I'll be fine in a moment. It's always bad in the beginning. The prison seeks to hold me inside, and though I'm here, I can feel tendrils of pure energy that try to drag me back down. It takes a bit of concentration to fight it.
He takes a seat on a boulder as he takes a deep breath, in and out as he tries to stabilize himself. This is what happened at the cabin, wasn't it? You were having problems fighting the prison's hold. He gives a brisk nod.
I'll be fine soon. Please, don't worry.
Once his eyes stop flashing, he gets up and takes off his already blood-stained shirt, discarding it. My hand flies to my mouth when I see the wounds appearing on his back and torso, almost like someone had clawed his skin out. Aemon, I whisper, tears accumulating at the corners of my eyes. I don't even think as I bring my wrist to his mouth, encouraging him to drink. He shakes his head.
I don't want to weaken you now.
He gives me a sad smile as he cleans the best he can of the blood flowing down his skin, before taking out a new black shirt. Seeing him in so much pain shakes me to my core. My actions are entirely instinctive as I bite hard on my tongue, enough to draw blood. Raising myself to the tips of my toes, I cup his cheeks, bringing him in for a kiss. As I open my mouth, I urge him to suck my tongue.
You shouldn't have done that.
He rasps as he wrenches himself from me. His breathing is ragged as he stares at me, his tongue tracing the remnants of blood on his upper lip. Maybe it was a few drops, but some of his injuries are already healing.
There will be more, Darcy. You can't heal all of them now. We can worry about this later, okay?
He watches me closely, waiting for me to agree. Okay, I sigh. Putting on his clean shirt, he makes himself presentable so there is no trace of blood or of injury. He changes his hair and eye color to black once more, taking the appearance he'd used when he passed himself as Caleb. When he's finally done, we start hand in hand towards Abel's house. It takes us a few minutes to reach it, and as we give each other a look of encouragement, I knock on the door. As before, the same elderly lady opens it. Helena, right? I give her a small smile. Is Mr. Nicholson home? She looks us both up and down before she beams at us.
Of course. Why don't you come into the drawing room while I tell him you're here? I hope this time you're staying for lunch.
I'm so sorry about last time. I wasn't feeling very well. But this time I promise we'll stay and taste your cooking.
And this is?
She moves her gaze from me to Aemon. Oh, this is my husband.
You're married?
She gasps.
But I thought you were a miss.
I purse my lips as I try to look convincing. Truth be told, I've never revealed this before since my husband and I were not on good terms when I came to Fairydale. But he ended up chasing after me, and here we are. I sigh. But now that he's here, I wanted him to meet Mr. Nicholson since he is my only living relative.
Oh dear, of course. He will be so pleased to hear about this. Come,
she adds effusively, showing us to the drawing room before going upstairs to call on Abel. We both take a seat, our hands still linked together. My heart is beating fast in anticipation, and a touch of fear since I do not know how all of this will unfold. According to the plan Eamon had concocted, we are to engage Abel in conversation at first, lull him into a sense of security while dropping enough hints to unsettle him.
Darcy, how nice to see you.
Mr. Nicholson suddenly appears in the doorway, slowly walking inside the room. He's using his cane for support, and as before, my eyes are drawn to the jewel resting atop it. Mr. Nicholson, I greet him. This is my husband, Anthony.
Pleased to meet you, sir.
Eamon extends his hand.
Husband?
He watches him with narrowed eyes.
What a surprise.
He adds dryly, and I can tell he doesn't seem to like the fact that I'm married.
Have we met before?
He suddenly asks as he takes Eamon's hand.
Have we?
He murmurs softly. I came to speak to you about a most urgent matter. I intervene. Abel grunts, still watching Eamon warily, studying him as if he can tell there's something wrong.
What is it?
He barely wrenches his eyes from Anthony to look at me. We all take a seat, Eamon and I on the couch, while Abel sits on the armchair opposite us, resting his cane against the outside of the chair, just as we'd anticipated. The coven will be here shortly, and they will proceed with the ritual. Two emissaries from the Holy See have already arrived at the Hale Manor, and they've taken over the preparations. The coven members are set to arrive soon to discuss the plan for the spell. I take a deep breath. I haven't been able to dissuade Rhiannon.
I see. I was afraid it would come to this.
He sighs dramatically. What can we do? I tried to approach Rhiannon with it, and she told me the most awful lies about you. I start, putting on my best act. He shakes his head, and I know he's already anticipated that Rhiannon would tell me everything. And despite her track record with lies, I'm quite certain she wasn't lying about this.
Of course she would.
He agrees.
You saw how she treated me just for attempting to talk with you. It's actually a wonder that you've managed to come here today.
He says as his eyes stray to Eamon. There's a twitch in his cheek as he studies him carefully, almost as if trying to place him somewhere. She is busy with the people from the Holy See.
I am happy that you understand that it's all lies. Rhiannon and I had a fully consensual relationship some 50 years ago. When she became pregnant, she decided to lie about the abuse because she didn't want to be seen as a single mother. The times were very different, you see. Now you might be able to survive the stigma, but back then the entire town shunned her. It was only her name and some decades of hiding that allowed her to show her face again.
I knew there must be some explanation for it. I nod emphatically. How could she say that you instructed Leo Pierce to rape my mother to get her pregnant? All because you seemingly knew of some prophecy that stated when and to whom I would be born. I give a dry laugh.
Right.
He clenches his teeth.
Of course it is not true.
He brings his gaze to Eamon again.
How come you've brought your husband with you?
You see, we had a huge row just before I left for Fairydale, and I swore I'd never see him again. I explain, giving him a fake history of myself and Anthony. He nods along to my story, but it's clear he has his doubts. So you see, we've come to ask for help. I don't know how to proceed, Mr. Nicholson. You're the only one that can guide me. I tell him, proud of myself for not wincing at such a blatant lie and even more suffocating pandering. God, I might have to bleach my mouth after this.
But how could I help if they are so set on performing the ritual? I am a mere old man against an entire coven of witches.
Well, you see, I bite my lip in uncertainty as I look to my husband, then back at Abel. I had a dream.
A dream?
His interest is suddenly piqued. I bite my lip as I do my best to appear uncertain. My ancestor, Elizabeth Creed, appeared in my dream. He blinks repeatedly, unable to mask his shock. From what Eamon had told me, no one is aware of the fact that I am Elizabeth, not even Abel, who knew Elizabeth. They all put it down to an eerie similarity both in appearance and purpose.
You dreamed about Elizabeth Creed.
He swallows hard. I nod. It scared me so badly. Good thing my darling Anthony came to find me on time. Otherwise, I thought I would go crazy.
Why?
He wets his lips, leaning forward.
What happened in that dream?
A frightening thing, Mr. Nicholson. She said the ritual will fail, and Eamon will be released, and he will avenge her death, that he will unleash death over Fairydale again.
Avenge her death?
He repeats, seemingly only caring about that aspect. Right. Didn't she die so long ago? How could he avenge her death when her killer must be already dead?
Indeed. And did she say anything else?
I shake my head.
She didn't mention the identity of her killer.
He continues to probe. No, she didn't tell me who it was, but she showed me the entire scene. It happened in the old church, did it not? His eyes flicker with surprise.
What else did she show you?
The killer was a young man, I think. I've never seen him before. He demanded her necklace, after which he killed someone else at the scene. Another man. I bring my fingers to my lips, nibbling on them. While she was grieving for him, he stabbed her. God, I've never seen anything more horrific. I recount as tears stream down my cheeks. Abel's face is white as he struggles to open his mouth to say something.
You seem distraught, Darcy.
He mentions, his lips trembling slightly. I suppose the scene affected me too much. Would you mind telling me where the restroom is so I can refresh myself?
Certainly.
He gives me a clipped answer, his jaw ground tight. He directs me to the end of the hallway, and I give him a sad smile as I exit the drawing room. I don't go to the restroom, though. Instead, I enter the kitchen where I find Helena toiling away at what would be our lunch. Helena, I call out. Mr. Nicholson asked me to tell you that he needs something urgently from town. Would you mind going there to buy it?
He did.
She blinks. Yes, I purse my lips. We need a selection of red, white, and purple candles, some marine salts. I give her an entire list of inane purchases that she needs to get. She regards me skeptically in the beginning, until I assure her it's for a secret ritual. Remembering she'd been the one overseeing the secret room on the second floor, I assume she is familiar with Abel's witchy pastime. The moment I mention that, she finally relents. He's trusting you to choose the best items, Helena. Please don't disappoint us.
Of course not. Mr. Nicholson knows to expect only the best from me,
she says as she puts on a coat and a hat. Grabbing her purse, she is already out the door. This way, Helena won't be harmed in our upcoming altercation. I tarry a few more moments before I return to the drawing room.
Your husband was telling me how you two met. Quite interesting that you did not tell anyone you were married. Mr. Vaughan certainly didn't find any documents relating to your civil state.
Why would he? I raise a brow.
And because he looked into your situation, of course. There's quite a bit of money at play, and anyone could pretend to be Leo's long-lost daughter. Isn't that right?
He strains a smile. Of course, he had to do his due diligence. I resume my seat, and Eamon takes my hand, his heat seeping into mine as he lets me know he is there for me. Although I am leading this conversation, he was the one who suggested we take this route, play up on any potential guilt Abel might have.
But tell me more about that dream. What else did you see? What did the young man look like? Or did you tell Rhiannon about it?
His barrage of questions takes us by surprise, yet one question stands out among the others. Did you tell Rhiannon? Why would he care if I told Rhiannon about it? I was going to, but she's been awfully busy with the guests. Why? Do you think it means anything?
No, of course not. Everyone is aware that Eamon killed Elizabeth and their children. It was quite horrible. He raped and killed her. I am certain the man you saw in your dream must have been Eamon.
He nods, almost as if to himself. Really? I frown. How would he know about the erroneous version of the collective memory which shows Eamon as the killer? I did not see it as such, I counter. No one raped Elizabeth. She was stabbed to death.
I am sure you must be mistaken, Darcy.
But how would you know?
Why, everyone knows. It's in the Coven archives.
I narrow my eyes at him, at the same time as Eamon squeezes my hand, a sign not to let my emotions get the best of me. But the question remains, how does he know about the archive version if he is not part of the Coven? I am told Eamon had long white hair. The man I saw did not. He had short, dark hair.
Did he?
He murmurs in discomfort.
I'm sure it was just a bad dream, Darcy. You shouldn't bother Rhiannon with something like that.
He tells me quite emphatically. My God, could it be that he was the one to interfere with the images from the archive? Otherwise, why would he be so scared of anyone finding out my version? But there's more, I mention, barely stifling a smile as I see him fidget in his seat.
More?
He whispers, his eyes widening. Elizabeth called him her son. He stares at me, seemingly struck speechless.
I think it's time for you to go, Darcy.
He suddenly says, jumping to his feet and reaching for his cane.
I forgot I have an appointment later in the day, and Helena must be...
I give Eamon a look, and he nods. The doors to the drawing room immediately close. I'm afraid Helena has left on an errand, I tell him.
What is happening here?
He asks in a thundering voice. Odd that you don't remember me, Abel. I smile sweetly. I'm told I look quite the same, I say as I push my hair off my face and strike a pose, anything to infuriate the damned man.
What?
Abel stammers, his eyes like two saucers. And just like that, Eamon changes his appearance to look back like himself.
You... it can't be.
He whispers.
You should be locked away. Not here. Not...
Not interfering with your plans. I bet you'd love that.
A snarl appears on Abel's face as he fully turns towards us. Energy swirls around him, but as he channels it towards us, I quickly say the words to the spell I'd learned, erecting a shield around us. The blast dispels around, too weak to penetrate our defense. Abel tries to summon another blast, but this time he's unsuccessful in hitting us.
I think you might need a power source for that. Something like this?
Eamon asks playfully as he raises the gem. While Abel had been captivated by my story, Eamon had focused his abilities on getting the gem, successfully dislodging it from the cane. We hadn't known it would be so easy, but since this worked, then the first part of the plan had been successfully completed. Eamon carefully pockets the gem, keeping it safe until we're able to fashion it into a necklace again, while I regard Abel's pitiful form.
Oh, I don't understand. You can't be Elizabeth.
But it seems I am. How does it feel, Abel, to stare into my eyes once more?
No.
He shakes his head.
You can't do this,
he yells, bringing his palms together to gather more energy. Eamon rolls his eyes, and with a snap of his fingers he has him across the wall, arms and legs apart.
You won't want to see this, Darcy,
he whispers, but I shake my head. I have to. Stepping forward, I stop in front of him. Why did you kill Abraham? I understand that you hated me and Eamon, but your brother? Why? He gives a maniacal laugh.
Because he was convenient. He's always been a pussy. At least he died like a fucking man.
He spits out. You think you deserve any praise for the way you killed him? For the way you slit his throat from behind like a coward? Eamon places his arm around me, grounding me even as my emotions threaten to get the best of me.
You know nothing, you stupid cow!
He yells at me.
You know fucking nothing!
Don't, I whisper to Eamon as I feel him tense. Let me talk to him. Turning to Abel, I look him in the eye. Then tell me why you did it. I know you worked with Cress and Finn from the beginning, but why?
Why do you think?
He snarls.
I spent my entire childhood being told I wasn't good enough on account of my sex only. Abraham was the heir to my father's fortune, and Lydia was the heir to my mother's coven. Where did that leave me? Nowhere.
But you never wanted money, did you? He would have had plenty of opportunity to become a very wealthy man, and by all accounts, he is the richest one in Fairydale. Yet from the beginning he'd stayed here. He gives a dry laugh.
Money.
He snorts.
I have plenty of money.
Of course he would. After all, Abraham's money all went to him after he died, did it not? Not even the money he owns is his by right. But you don't have power. You never did.
It's all because of that stupid coven and their rules. I can perform spells. I can do everything a woman can.
But you do not have the energy source to do so. I fill in the blanks. He is able to do spells, potentially on account of his blood relation to the Stewart family, but only the female line is blessed with innate abilities.
That's what Cress and Finn offered you.
Eamon, who'd been silent until now, finally speaks.
They bought you with the necklace, promising you it would give you everything you ever wanted.
My cooperation in their plan was a small price to pay for immortality, wouldn't you say?
He asks sarcastically.
Who in their right minds would not jump at that?
He tries to move as he mutters a few words in Latin under his breath, but Eamon is quick to shut him off, clamping his mouth shut. He struggles, making muffled noises and thrashing as much as he can before Eamon restrains him even more, shaking his head at his pitiful efforts. Except that for the last 24 years, the necklace hasn't been working too well. Has it? I add. He frowns.
You didn't know, did you? The necklace isn't just a source of power.
Aemon interjects.
It's part of her, and it will always recognize her as the master. It's why it might have given you some power, but never to its full capacity.
More muffled sounds, and Aemon removes the mouth clamp for a moment.
Crescent Finn will fucking end you. You think you're so high and mighty now, but wait until they get their hands on you, you fucking filthy demon.
He curses.
They will send you back to hell where you belong.
Aemon stops him from talking again. Turning to him, I give him a confident look. I'll do it.
Darcy, are you sure? You don't have to.
I need to. If not, I'll probably be haunted my entire life by that scene and the way he killed us. I shake my head. It's my duty. For Abraham. He looks unconvinced for a moment before he nods.
For Abraham.
He repeats, taking a step back. Turning my attention to Abel, who is throwing daggers at me with his eyes, I bring my fingers together, remembering one other spell I'd learned. This might not have given me the answers I wanted to hear. He'd made no excuses for his behavior, and in his mind, he doesn't see himself as guilty. He'd simply acted in his best interests. I look at him, and I try to imagine the 10-year-old he'd been when we first picked him up from London. I remember the youth he'd been before all the corruption, before the fratricide, and the abomination he'd become. Yet no matter how hard I try, everything is tainted by his actions. I can no longer see him as my son, Abel. Only Archibald Nicholson, an old, pitiful man who'd sold his entire family in his quest for power. A man whose chief qualities have been his greed and treachery. There is nothing more disappointing for a mother than seeing her son turn out the way you did. But you never did consider me your mother, did you? Not even your aunt. You always saw us as the enemy, and you let your hate poison your heart until you turned against your own brother. I speak, my voice unwavering. I no longer recognize you as any relation of mine, Abel, or Archibald Nicholson. You are nothing, and you will perish as nothing but an afterthought in the history books. His cheek twitches as he stares malevolently at me. If he'd been able to, I don't doubt he would have spit in my face and cursed me some more. After all, that's all he can do, being as helpless as he is. Neither Aemon nor I imagined he would rely almost entirely on the jewel for his powers, or that he would remain so thoroughly vulnerable without it. Alas, my husband is right. He made his bed. He will now rest in it. Forever. Incendia, I whisper, as I channel my attention towards him, watching his entire body catch on fire. I'd picked the spell randomly while reading through the ones Lydia had marked for me, thinking if the time came, this would be the most appropriate way for Abel to go. He'd blamed Aemon for being a hellish creature when he'd been the worst evil all along. It's only fitting that he should be the one to burn in hell. Black flames swirl around him and consume him until nothing is left of his flesh. My eyes widen as I realize this is the exact way Leo Pierce had died, after he'd had an attack. But how? Aemon, did you kill Leo Pierce? He looks pensive for a moment.
For Abraham.
I don't think it was, I whisper. He died just like this, with the same spell.
You think?
Someone else killed him. Someone who would have known this specific spell. Before I can speak further, a loud noise erupts in the house, followed by another. Like a howling sound, it's absolutely terrifying in its intensity. My hands go to my ears, just as Eamon takes me in his arms, ready to flash us out of the house. No, I whisper. The second floor. I'm sure it's coming from there.
It could be a trap. Who knows what type of creature Abel could have summoned and is now going berserk without a master.
No, I shake my head. I don't know why I'm so convinced, but I do not believe the source of the noise means us harm. The sound reverberates again in the house, this time sounding more like a wail than a howl. It's a signal of distress, Eamon, not one of attack, I whisper, wrenching myself from his arms as I hurry to the staircase. Eamon is right on my tracks as I chase the source of the sound. It's not on the first floor, though. It's on the second.
That's the room,
he says as he comes behind me.
The one I couldn't go into.
There's someone inside, I whisper. I'm sure there's someone inside. We walk towards the room, yet as I reach out with my hand, I come across the same barrier Eamon had mentioned.
Let me try again,
Eamon suggests. He creates a ball of energy in his hands that he launches at the barrier. Yet, just as it reaches it, there's a light ripple before the blast is thrown back at us. Eamon is quick enough to remove me from its trajectory, but that means the barrier will not budge no matter how much power we throw at it.